Log Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, that's not what you just said. She was tired.
A little tired. We had a big week.
Tell me about the week, the two big days.
We did. Dallas was on Wednesday, and that was a lot of fun and great. But they haven't had the same people speak in Dallas as we've heard, so a lot of the stuff was brand new for them. So I think the crowd was so busy processing all day that I didn't get the feedback that I normally get. It was still a great day. It was wonderful. Made lots of new friends. Can't wait to go back, but it was a different kind of day. Shreveport, now they're just my people in Shreveport. We had a great, great, fun day on Friday. And you know how much I love Louisiana anyway.
Right.
And someone came that had come to the conference in Baton Rouge, and she brought some friends, and so that was a lot of fun. And then several people that have emailed me a lot over the past few weeks trying to get things settled, that was a lot of fun. So it was just a really big week. And I'm resting up, for this next big week, because New Orleans is on Thursday and then Lafayette, Louisiana on Friday. And there are still some seats left for New Orleans, but it is really close to being sold out. Lafayette, there's lots of room in Lafayette if anybody wants to come. But then Indianapolis, I started looking at my numbers, and I think I'm oversold with Indianapolis. So that's a little bit of a panic that I'll have to take care of in the morning and see if we can bump on up. So that's going to be huge. So week one down of this three-week tour, and it's exciting and it's fun. And it's going to be great. So there we go. And then I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, and then we scheduled one last conference for the year in Lexington, Kentucky, at home practically on Friday. I think it's December 1st. I'm pretty sure. Is it, Johnny? Yeah. Nope, it's December 2nd. December 2nd. So that will be fun, too. And that just goes up on the website today. I haven't even gotten the registration stuff up for that yet. But that's going to be a lot of fun. So busy, big, exciting end to a great year.
And then when is Kisha?
Kisha's in February, and that's in Louisville. So any of our speech pathology friends or DIs who want to go play speech therapist for the day. Yeah, and that's different from my conference. What I'm going to talk about in Kisha is just going to be a little snippet, a little half of the full day thing. So, yeah.
And you said, I hope I'm not divulging anything I'm not supposed to, but I was surprised to hear that I only got a couple text messages from you this week, but one of them was shortly after your Dallas conference, and you said that signing was a little bit, they weren't big signers down there, or that was
They're
kind
not
of a,
big signers. They're not big signers in Texas. Now, they do sign, but they say there's lots of opposition from parents and from physicians about signing. So that was a little different for me. They also haven't had lots of education about apraxia. So that was really different.
Right.
And so we got to talk about some of that. So again, that's why I said they haven't had the same kinds of experiences with continuing education conferences and great speakers as I think we've had here. And it always is really funny, you know, you've been to the conference, and I'll start talking about, you know, one of my favorite people that I've heard, and it's very funny when only one or two hands in a room full of 50-plus people go up that they've heard Dr. Rossetti or they've heard Nancy Kaufman or they've read a lot of the same things that I've read. So it was really, it was just they've had different experiences. So it was a good day. Sometimes on other conferences, I feel like, hey, I'm preaching to the choir here. They're all on board with, you know, exactly the same kinds of, they've heard the same kinds of people. And so, again, it was fun, though. I loved it. It was great. I can't wait to go back to Texas.
And were they able to share with you, Laura, what do they do in lieu of signing? I mean, to me, that's such an integral part of what we do with language delayed kids.
That it's they like, talk. I know. I think that they just really go straight to words, and which is fine for kids who are ready. And this leads us right into tonight's topic. I don't know if you meant for this to be a segue, Kate, but this is just about perfect. Maybe you did.
Good.
As you're giggling, I guess it is. I guess there's a method to your questions here. We're talking about what we do for children before they're really ready to talk. They're not developmentally ready to use words yet. What are some alternative things that we might introduce? And if you've listened to the show, if tonight is not your first night or your first time, you know that Kate and I talk about signs all of the time and how we use them and how it's our first strategy. Okay, we have a caller. Let's go ahead.
Oh, my.
Yay! Yay! Hold on.
Joey.
Hi there, caller. Are you there? Hello? Hello, caller.
I kind of thought I heard something, like a kid in the background.
I think they hung up, yeah. Okay. Call us back if you want to. That sounds great, but... Okay, let me get back on track here. And you know what I was supposed to say before I started in with what our topic was tonight? Last week, we did not do our topic. We were supposed to talk about the quantitative and qualitative differences that we see with social skills and the whole list of key social skills that we want children, that children need before they're really developmentally ready to communicate. We will talk about that next week. And honestly, I just forgot that we had not done that topic when I received an email this week from a therapist who had lots of questions about signs versus pecs. And so I just, you know, again, it was a big, hectic, busy week for me. I just hurriedly typed back, oh, this is a great topic for the podcast, and then just ran with it with thinking this is what we're doing tonight with the show without remembering that we were supposed to go back and talk about that social skill stuff. So that's what we'll do next week. So I'm glad we already had the show topic established for next week. Whew, you know, one less thing on my to-do list. So we'll pick that up next week. But this week we'll talk about signing and PECS. And PECS means picture exchange communication system. And it's teaching a child how to use pictures to request their preferred items in their daily environments, whether it be with foods or toys or an activity, and how we use that, how we decide between signs and pictures, which one will work best, when the situations are that we think we might wait on either one of those systems, how using a system like PECS, the picture exchange communication system, and that's the last time I'm going to tell you what that means, how using that system differs from what a lot of therapists like to do, which is just take a bunch of pictures and put them on a board for mom and say, here, now he can tell you what he wants. Good luck with that. That hardly ever works with a child who really is not developmentally ready to talk yet, because they also aren't developmentally usually ready to use pictures, and that kind of system without any structure and any teaching is almost worse than doing nothing, because mom has expectations that her child should be able to do it, again, without any help or any systematic introduction of those pictures. So we'll talk about some of that stuff tonight, and how we use pictures, how we train kids with pictures, how we introduce a new science, and how we decide on a really practical day-to-day level what would be better for a family. And again, you can find out more information about this topic at my website at teachmetotalk.com. There are whole sections of this in my therapy manual, Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual. Interesting title, huh? And there are sections about that that you can read, and we are not going to talk about all of that information per se. I want this to be more casual and just more real life with how we really make those decisions. So that's kind of my precursor for this introduction. Kate, is there anything you want to talk about on that kind of as a precursor before I read her questions, and then we'll get going with what we would do in this situation?
I'd say reader questions, and that we'll have plenty to fill in there, I'm sure.
Okay. So this is from a speech pathologist that I've had the pleasure of meeting who came to my conference in Louisville. She lives in Western Kentucky, and she says, I need some help. And I'm just going to paraphrase it because it's kind of long. But she says that she's been working with one of her little friends with PECs, and he has mastered all the way up to phase four using the sentence strip, I want, and then can pick from there. Now, that just right there, that information alone tells me, wow, he is a great user of pictures. If she has been able to walk him through the steps, you know, the first phase is just that he'll pick between, just that he'll present that one picture that's available for the item that the adult is holding. Then there's phase two is, I wish I had the book as I'm saying this. I could be wrong out of order here. Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, but distance training is before, or proximity training, where you're teaching a kid how to trade across space, comes before discriminating pictures, right? Or does discriminating pictures come first?
I don't recall, Laura.
See, I haven't had a PECS kid in a long time. Have you?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to say maybe it does come before, which I always kind of wonder why that is, to be honest. But, I mean, I kind of think the discriminating should come first. But, anyway, I think maybe the proximity does come. It's second. I think you're right.
I know. Maybe I can get my PECS manual and then kind of take a look at that while we're talking. It's in the box, Johnny. It's in the box from conferences. As you can see, our executive producer is helping me get the manual. Or as you can see, thank God, as you can hear. Let's see, where was I? And then the sentence strip comes. That's phase four. And to answer your question, I think the reason that you do proximity training first is you want children to learn to initiate. And if you are training children that you take this picture to mommy who is across the room, that teaches the initiation piece. And I think that the rationale is that we really want kids to learn how to initiate even before they're discriminating, because that's what communication really is. It's to be able to identify what you want and then initiate instead of someone constantly asking you, what do you want? What do you need? You know, so that you learn that vital piece. And so many of our kids that would use pictures, especially kids who are on the spectrum, lack that core skill of being able to really initiate, or they might have it in a really in that gestural form, whereas they're leading their moms to the kitchen, or they're pushing and pulling their mom's hands, and they're using some gestures. But as I've come to talk about this, and I know we were having a conversation about this a couple of weeks ago, I remember a cell phone conversation where those gestures are functional gestures. They're not symbolic gestures. A symbolic gesture would be like pointing or waving or clapping. And again, some of our kids on the spectrum are using just those gestures, and, you know, we laugh, not laugh in a ha-ha joke kind of way, but refer to that as the whole big hand theory, where I know that big old hand can help me operate this toy, or I can pull that big old hand into the kitchen and it can reach up for me and get what I want. But lots of our little friends don't have gestures beyond that point. And they don't understand sometimes that even mommy's arm is attached to her face, but aren't really looking past that and don't really have that whole joint attention piece. They just get the very first important step, which is this adult hand can do things that I cannot do on my own, which, again, it's an important skill, but we don't want it to stop there. Uh-oh.
Sorry.
Did you just drop something?
I did. Sorry.
That's okay. All right. So, let's see. What was my point before I started rambling on about what PECS was there?
This gal who has this kid who's at the fourth phase.
So he's worked up to the fourth phase. So that tells me that he's really, really done pretty well with that. If you can get a kid to that fourth phase, don't you think that's great? Because a lot of times I don't even get kids that far in it. They move on in that they start signing and or talking, and I wouldn't even move forward through that. Because in my mind, I use PECS with toddlers as what we would call a transition or a bridge. We want them to learn how to communicate. I hardly ever think that this kind of system will be a kid's only means to communicate. However, there are lots of children that that's what's going to be their communication system for the foreseeable future. But a lot of times with our kids, PEX introduces them to the concept that I have to do something to get something, and then they move on to signs and or words, and PEX has just been our launching point, so I might not necessarily get a kid to that fourth level and beyond. And that's been your experience as well, right?
Yes. I can't say that I've – but that's, you know, I'd say a reflection of the fact that we work with 0 to 3-year-old kids. So,
right.
As you said, as they get older, sometimes that is what they use. And
right.
Then we'd have to get better at it and use it a lot more. But usually it is kind of a way to introduce. Words have meaning. Words have a function. You have to do something to get something. And once they get that, they're usually ready to move along.
Right. And that's what's happened with this kid. And let me go back to the letter. She said, prior to introducing PECs, and let me just say one more little thing about that. PECs, or the Picture Exchange Communication System, is a system. It's a very systematic, structured teaching method. Any therapist working in birth to three who thinks that using pictures is a good idea, I beg them, and parents as well, to invest the money and buy the Picture Exchange Communication System training manual, because you need to learn how to properly introduce pictures. How many calls, Kate, have we had, and how many letters and emails have I gotten on the website that say, my therapist is using pictures or using PECs, but then they go on to explain something that is so far removed from the original intent of PECs, which would be to introduce one picture for an item that a child is highly motivated to request, and to just train with just a few set of pictures, but just one at a time, and then progress to the child learning to, again, take the picture from a Velcro strip that they've assembled in a notebook or on a page, and then learn to trade again, like we were talking about before, learn to initiate so that when mom is across the room or lean across a table or do something to initiate that communication, then you learn how to pick from a choice of two pictures, and you don't just do that with two pictures a kid would want. You need to have a preferred picture and a non-preferred picture so that you really know that a child is selecting what he wants versus just either choice will do, so you never really know that the kid knows and understands. And so, again, lots of people who haven't been trained in PECs think that you can just maybe introduce 4 or 5 pictures at a time, take pictures of things that you think the kid might want, set them out in front of him and say, show me what you want, tell me what you want. Or worse, put them all up on, you know, again, a poster board on the refrigerator, and the kid's supposed to automatically know, I walk over there and give one of these pictures to mommy, or while I'm screaming in the middle of my fit because mommy doesn't understand what I want, that I'm going to somehow be able to pull it together to reach up and grab the picture and hand it to her. You know, without the systematic training of PECs and without the adult having the mindset that of how to teach this, pictures are often so misused and unused. Don't you find that a lot with kids that you've worked with in the past, Kate, when you haven't been the one introducing the pictures, how horribly wrong that kind of system can go?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's frankly why I've kind of gotten, I used to do more of it, and, well, that kind of relates to what this speech therapist kind of goes on to say, but, you said in Texas they have issues with getting families and doctors on board with signing. I always felt like the resistance to PECs was even bigger. And the reality is that there's something to be taken care of, and it gets lost easily. And there are a lot of downsides, especially maybe with 0 to 3-year-old kids who are kind of into everything. But anyway, right. So I used to do it a lot more than I do now. I have to be really convinced that a parent is in agreement and wants to give it an honest try, because it's a lot of work to set it up, and oftentimes it doesn't really get used.
Right, and I really, that's one of my prerequisites. If I don't have a really committed family to PECS and a family who's really willing to work with me, the other thing that PECS really requires two adults. One, to be the person who helps the child and assists the child, especially in the initial phases of selecting the picture and putting it in the hand of the person who's the presenter. I think PECS calls it something different, but the person who has whatever the kid wants. And if you don't have two committed adults that can do that a lot and pretty consistently, then that would be a reason that I wouldn't consider PECS as an option for kids. And what you were talking about, just the practicalities of how invested is mom going to be in the system. There are some families that, you know, they have so many children and so many scheduling constraints, and it's just, it's hard to find everybody's shoes, much less keep up with pictures. And in those kinds of households, I might talk about PECS, but I would never really think about that as a realistic solution for those kinds of moms, because even the PECS training manual says that you need 30 opportunities to trade pictures per day for that system to really be carried over and used like it should. If a family is not going to be able to make that kind of commitment, and again, I'm not judging here. I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I'm just saying that's something that we have to consider. If there aren't enough time or adults, or if there's not enough commitment, like you said, I'm not going to do it because it's not going to be really useful for a child to do 1 hour a week during the therapy time with me, or even 2 hours a week during therapy time. It has to be something that would be carried over. Now, that being said, if the kid is getting ready to go to preschool, lots of preschool systems have picture systems in place, and lots of educators know how to use this kind of system. So that might be a reason that I would think, okay, I'm going to pursue this, because even though mom can't carry this over at home, this will be a useful system for an academic day where he's there 3 hours or 4 hours or more, and then I might think that that would be a reason to go ahead and introduce it, even if it's not completely functional and practical for home.
Right. And maybe just, I think the other thing I've kind of changed as I've been at this longer is if I'm introducing it, I'm not as gung-ho about taking so many pictures, and I'm going to really just use a couple of things that kids request or show an interest in all day long. You know, their sippy cup, their favorite snack,
right?
Maybe a favorite toy that they have.
Or
but
two.
That's about,
yeah.
Yes. And then, you know, you got to see whether or not you can get the kids to use it functionally and also the parents to embrace the concept. And if they do, great, go for it. But if you
right.
don't, yeah. Don't.
Let's look for something else, yeah. All right, so back to the therapist letter. She says, prior to doing PECS, she spent 2 months working on signing, but the child was frustrated and refused to sign. So in that case, she tried signing and felt like, okay, after 2 months, that's a pretty good indication that I have tried this and this is not working. She didn't mention whether the kid was really developmentally ready to sign. And I bet that he was because, again, she's been to my course and she knows this information. But a lot of times therapists will introduce signs when a child is not ready yet. And this would be the same for pictures. When a child is developmentally less than 12 months old, and, again, I'm talking about a two-year-old that might be functioning at the 6 to 9 month level, there are other things that you need to be working on first to get them cognitively and get those play skills going a little more before a lot of kids are going to really be ready to sign back to you. Now, that's not to say that you won't sign to them and that you won't model those signs and teach moms and dads and other family members those signs, but to really, really think that a child is developmentally ready to sign, he needs to be right around that 12-month developmental level. Now, some signing people will say they don't really think that's necessary, that you can introduce it before that. And certainly with typically developing babies, we might introduce signs before that. But really, kids are closer to that 12-month developmental level, meaning that cognitively they're functioning there, language-wise they're functioning there, motorically they can do some things with their hands, and the prerequisite motor skills that we like to see are clapping and waving and reaching and maybe doing some of those little social games with you, like playing pat a cake, covering their eyes with their hands or using a blanket to cover their heads during peekaboo, those kinds of really early gestures. And the rationale for that is really, in my mind, based on common sense. If they haven't learned how to functionally use their little hands to do things like those social games and then symbolically use their little hands like to clap for yay or to wave when somebody's going to go, if they can't do those really functional gestures, they're just not ready yet. They're just not developmentally there yet. You've got to get them ready through play and through being really social in your interactions and your social games and moving those motor skills along. But until then, you really could be beating your head against a wall trying to get a kid to do something that he's just not ready to do. And that happens a lot, but I'm not saying that that happened necessarily. I don't know that that's happened or not happened in this situation because we don't know all the things about this particular child, but for whatever reason, signing did not work for him for a two-month period of time. How do you feel about that, Kate? We've never really talked about this before, but haven't you had experiences that have made you feel like, boy, I better wait till that kid is ready before I really expect to see those signs back to me?
Yes, most certainly. I certainly have. But I will say, and this is just me thinking out loud, and we haven't, this is not Laura's
yeah.
thing. This is just Kate expounding on this. I will say, and I don't know if she includes this in her letter, but to me it's a little suspicious that he didn't sign in 2 months, and then she did PECS, and he got to the fourth level on that. I mean, that's pretty far along.
Pretty high.
In our
yeah.
world for a kid who didn't get signing. But, it's certainly possible. I wonder how long
yeah.
it took and how that
right.
went and,
I know. This is the thing that might have helped with that. She said that they started ABA therapy because the child had got a PDD-NOS, and that's pervasive developmental
okay.
disorder, not otherwise specified. Did I send you this email? You might have read it and then forgot about
I
it.
I did. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And she said that the ABA therapist started using PECS. See, she started seeing the kid first, and then the ABA team got on board. And so the ABA therapist started with PECS. So that's probably why PECS really took off, because they had structured, focused teaching time, really just working on that. So that probably explains why that
right.
took off. What do you think?
Probably, and normally
yeah.
when the ABA is involved, it's a lot more hours.
Right.
You know what I mean? They
right.
get
sure.
15 hours a week of ABA therapy or 20 or 30 or whatever, and so that would be a lot more focused effort on getting
time.
A kid to use any
yeah.
system. Yeah.
Exactly. And the ABA therapist also introduced signing when they were not having success with verbal imitation. And so then, or she says, now the child is spontaneously using signs to request and to label toys and people. And then this is the question. She says, Mom is undecided about whether to continue with both PECS and signing or just to use signs and verbal language. Mom mentioned that PECS is difficult to her to follow through with during the week because she has 2 children under 2.5. Well, that's a lot. Those are 2 babies. And that's
yep.
a big time-consuming task that they have going on in their house. And, again, the older kid apparently is language-delayed and, has some other issues because of the PDD-NOS situation. So, again, I can see how pictures would be a big deal to follow through with. She stated that the child may request something from his PECS manual, but sometimes Mom is not able to get what he wants right away. Mom is upset about that. She and Mom talked about that they need to use the communication system that's going to be the best system for them to follow through with. This child is also getting additional speech therapy outside of First Steps, and Mom wanted that therapist to focus on some different kinds of goals. She wanted her early intervention person to continue with PECS. The other speech pathologist outside of the early intervention system was supposed to target verbal words and oral motor, but that person has seen how well the kid is doing with PECS, so now she wants to do PECS too. And so here's the conflict. Mom's saying, okay, I've got all these therapists using PECS with him, but guess what, ladies? This may not always work for me at home. There are times when I can't get the pictures. There are times when he gives me a picture and I can't do anything about that. My point, and what I immediately thought when I read that, is, okay, yeah, I feel really badly for that little guy that he thinks, okay, I'm going to use this PECS, I'm going to use this picture, and I'm going to get it. But that can happen with signs and words, too. I mean,
right.
Aren't there all times that, and parents tell me this all the time, you know, they'll say, Laura, I just want to tell you, thanks a lot for teaching him to sign candy, because he's signing candy from the time he gets up in the morning till the time he goes to bed. There are times, although we want to do everything that we can to reinforce a child's early request and to really give them what they want and to get what they want. However, there are times when that is not going to work out, whether you use a picture, a sign, or a word. That's just how life is. I mean, were you thinking the same thing when you read it?
Yes, I was.
Yes.
I'm guessing she's having, I mean, my biggest issue in the real world has been mostly either, you know, you do have to have them at the ready. You have to always know where they are. You always have to have, you know, the child has to have access to them. And if another kid gets a hold of them, or sometimes even that kid, they get their little signing book or, I mean, their little picture book. And before you know it, they've pulled out all the pictures and half of them are stuck to the underneath of the couch and, you know what I mean? It's very easy to have your pretty little book disassembled
destroyed.
Destroyed. You know, and she has two young kids. It wouldn't surprise me. That's what I've had happen a lot. And you go and you say, well, where's the picture of the sippy cup? Oh, we can't find that one. You know, okay. You know.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just life. I mean, that's something that happens. And, again, sometimes I think some therapists who don't remember what it's like to parent itty-bitty kids and how hectic your days are, and some days you can't even take a shower because you have so many demands on you mom-wise. So adding the whole you have to keep the book available at all times, blah, 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 blah. You know, again, I get it when a parent can't always follow through with that. I mean, I am not so old that I don't remember those times. I was going to grad school with a two-year-old and a newborn. Hey, I totally know about all that. So,
yeah.
And again, I'm meaning that. I totally mean, I'm talking about scheduling-wise. I'm not talking about specifically parenting a kid that's language delayed. I mean, those things are just bound to happen, and so certainly neither of us are the kind of therapist that would be so judgmental that we would not realize those real life practical things. And that was my response back to this therapist. Hey, if mom tells you she can't follow through, guess what? She cannot follow through, and that is okay. And if I were you, I would try to move on from that, because she's telling you this system is not really completely functional for her. That being said, I have had some other parents who have made incredible sacrifices and who have just somehow made things work when they've considered all the factors and then decided, okay, but pictures are going to be my kid's best chance. Remember the sweet little family that we worked with, Kate, with a little girl with Rett syndrome? Her mother was an educator. She kept other children in their home so that she could be home with that little girl full time. And, boy, did she use their system. They did lots of augmentative alternative communication systems. But that's because that mom was completely committed to that, and she knew for her little girl, okay, speech is not really going to be a realistic goal for her. And so I think that that's another factor when therapists are making this decision and when families are deciding. If speech, or in this case even signs for this little girl, weren't really practical, because with Rett syndrome, you lose function of your hands, and so you can't really sign that consistently and reliably when you can't always make your hands do what you want them to do. And so in that situation, you would look at really committing to making that kind of system work, because that might be her lifetime communication system, and she needs to start really working out ways to use that and working out ways to use those things in their family's daily lives. And I have never seen a family more committed and more practical at the same time about using all of the things that she incorporated with her little girl. But again, that's because she, A, was educationally prepared to do that since she was a teacher, and B, she was looking at a lifetime of this is what it's going to be. This is, we've got to make this kind of thing work. So that would be another factor in making that decision with which one you're going to go with as to long-term, prognostically, what's my kid most likely to be able to do. And it sounds like for this family, he's not going to use PECS long-term, so it got them over the hump, and I would quit worrying about it if mom has decided it's not going to work for them.
Right. And I've certainly, I would say that is how I've kind of used PECS, introduced the concept, and sometimes they get it. A lot of times they do move. I may have started with signing, and that was unsuccessful, and then I thought, well, okay, to me PECS
right.
has a little less of a requirement as far as the child skills. You know what I mean? I think
right.
I've started there, and once they get that, it does seem like a lot of times those kids, once they kind of get the whole trading thing and that these
mm-hmm.
pictures represent something, you can bump them up to signs, and that's kind of been, you know, what I've tried to have done and have normally been pretty successful with it. Kind of like when they get the pictures, they're about ready to get the signs.
Right. And that's, you know, we've done this for a long time now. And then this therapist, and I've heard other therapists talk about this in this way, and the therapist that sent us this question followed up with a comment later in the week. And she said on Friday, she sent me an email that said, that the parents of this little boy, that she's their session this week, the parents told her that they found this book by James Copeland, and I don't know him. Do you, Kate?
No.
He's a physician. He's an MD, and his book is Making Sense of Autistic Spectrum Disorders. Apparently, he's doing some conferences because the parents are going to go hear him talk. And she said, and again, we've done this without. This has been our approach for a long time, that we try signs and words first, and if they're not getting words, you know, you're really pushing signs. If they're not getting signs, then we kind of back up to pictures, and then once kids move along with pictures, then we reintroduce the signs, and kids are usually able to do that, and then lo and behold, at some point they start adding words with that too, and then when they're really talking, the signs just fade away. Well, James Copeland also agrees with that. And she says there's a nice illustration in his book that he has a chapter on speech therapy, and he has a whole, I guess she says it's a graph, that kids would do that same thing, that they may start out with PECS, and that because signing is a little more difficult, then they're bumped up to signing, and then then a lot of times they start talking, when their signs get a little bit better, PECS fades away, they sign and they talk, and then when their words get better, their signs go away too. So again, I'm glad that this guy agrees with us on that. And she, again, he says he has this nice graph that shows these systems kind of overlapping. Now, this was when I went to graduate school in the 90s. We called this total communication. And I'm sure their speech therapist is snickering right now as they hear me say that, because that theory was, okay, you just try a little bit of everything and see what works. But we've tweaked that a little bit in that you're really, really looking at where the kid is developmentally, what will work for him based on, again, his strengths and weaknesses from his own individual skill set, and you consider where a parent is and what a parent can and can't do, and what their own their preconceived opinions are, and then what they're thinking long term for their kid as far as communicating would go. You know, certainly that would be a factor as well. So he apparently has a nice graph that he's organized. I can't wait to get my hands on that and take a look at that, because I do think that's a good visual representation of what happens in real-life situations with real kids, with how we use kind of this whole system to make decisions and decide what will work for a kid when. The nice thing about all this is you are really using whatever system you decide to move them ahead to talk. Most of the time, most of the kids that we see will be verbal at some point down the line, and so you're just using these things as an in-between measure or as a transition to move them toward verbal language. For most of our kids, thankfully, these systems are not going to be long-term or lifelong. Sometimes they will be, and again, I think when that case happens, then you really are looking at which system will work long-term for a family. And again, that might make a family make a different decision versus whether this is just something they're using to get a kid over the hump.
Yeah, and oftentimes that may not be something we necessarily know or can predict with the kids we see. Like in the case you referred to earlier, okay, the odds were pretty good because she had a diagnosis that, you know, kind of predicts what the prognosis is going to be for the most part, and so she knew that. But a lot of times with our kids, you know, we don't really know. We may have some guess, but can't predict the future, and, you know, so there's always that question. Well, and, gee, if people have in Texas have a hard time convincing people of signing, I think the pictures is an even harder sell. So I don't know.
It is funny how, and some therapists, I think, automatically introduce pictures and maybe have worked out their own systems a little bit better than that. And I think you alluded to that earlier in your career, you might have introduced it to kids that now you wouldn't necessarily think about it, but you had more of a therapy routine based on that. I mean, I don't know that you don't have that now. I don't know what changed about that other than just the practicality of, okay, I'm not sure I'm going to introduce something in therapy that a mom is not going to be able to follow through with.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I really don't have anything to say. Go.
Well,
you sound like you have a better thought than me, so please.
No, I don't know about that now. No, I was just going to say that in my experience, really those parents who are most, and you know, again, preface this all by saying we see 0 to 3-year-olds, so, you know, they're very young kids we're talking about. I'm sure if we were third grade, you know, dealing with school-age kids, we'd have a different mindset with our parents.
Exactly.
You know, we have to, all of our parents want their kids to talk. We totally get that. We want their kids to talk. I mean, that's, you know, our end goal, always. That's always it. But I do think that the convincing parents that pictures are the way to go can be, I've had the best response in parents, I guess what I'm trying to say is, when I have really given an honest shot to signing and encouraged the family to do that, and they have, and it hasn't worked. Just like this therapist who wrote in, she started with signs. That didn't really go. Then she went to the picture. Of course, they had ABA, and they're supporting the same thing. So it was a success. But I just think it's really hard to go in and say, you know, his best shot is pictures on day one. And I always kind of start with
I never
signs.
Do that.
No, I don't either. Because I think that's an even more difficult thing to convince parents that's the way to go, even if in your heart of hearts you think it probably is.
Right.
Another
thing that we've had happen, and we share a little guy that this is happening with this right now, he's not developmentally even ready to use pictures yet. And again, the pictures don't mean anything to him yet. We're really working on lots of functional play, lots of social stuff. And he is on the spectrum, and he's always been pretty noisy, pretty verbal. And so we're getting much better luck with him with establishing automatic speech and verbal routines based on our play routines and on the incredible stuff that his mom does. You know, what word productions we're getting from him or recognizable words are when we're introducing those in the context of, again, play and social games. And he can't use signs or pictures yet because of his system and his just because that's where he is developmentally. And so, again, you have to look at where every kid is and what he is giving you information about that you can do. I tried for a couple different sessions to introduce PECS with him, and is like a lot of kids that I've tried with over the years that just weren't there yet. They try to tear up the picture or eat the picture or throw the picture or, you know, scratch my eyes out with the picture or whatever. I mean, he hasn't done that. I'm thinking about another little boy. But they're, again, not developmentally ready to use pictures. But, so, you know, we're starting to hear some, and again, more consistent, not 100% consistently, but what we're getting with him is, you know, he's going to talk probably before he would even be able to use words or use pictures. And again, that's just based on what's happening with that little
pictures,
guy.
He said words or pictures.
Signs or pictures, I'm sorry. Signs or pictures. You know, pictures aren't meaningful to him yet. And so to always say that you're always going to start with this and it will always work, you know, of course there are exceptions to every single situation that you might present. And a lot of our little guys on the spectrum aren't really, when we're working in birth to three programs, and because of the amount of their disorder and their, and again, dysfunction, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings when I'm saying that word, but that's what it is. He's not going to use signs or pictures right now. He's not there yet, but we are hearing some other verbal imitations of really well-rehearsed, well-established routines. The people that do a lot of research about that, of course, are the Kegels, Robert and Lynn Kegel, and they're autism experts, and they talk about that in their, what is their stuff called? I'm totally going blank. This is fatigue.
I can't
anyway.
Help you. I do not know.
Okay. Okay. I will get that, and I will clarify that reference for next week. But they talk a lot about that with a lot of our kids who are on the spectrum that are pretty verbal, meaning that they're using lots of babbling or jargon or even self-stimulatory things, that sometimes with those kids they'll go straight to speech, and that you don't really want to spend too much time on signs or pictures with those kids because they're ready to talk. You just got to give them something to say. And I don't believe that for every single kid, but for our little friend that we're working with right now, he may pick up signs and pictures later, but right now we've seen more positive stuff, comparatively speaking, with play and with interaction and with introducing those very well-rehearsed words, those fun exclamatory words, and again, words that are really meaningful to him, like his name, in the context of those social routines, than if we were spending all of our time on signs and pictures. I'm not sure that we would get there with him.
Right.
I mean, do you agree with that?
I think I do.
It's
yes.
Okay to have disagreements.
No, I think I really do. I think right now that's, you know, that's a strength that he has, is all that vocalizing.
Right.
And
right.
Why not go with that rather than try and encourage something that thus far hasn't shown itself to be a strength? So
right.
It's all going to be a process. It's all going to be something he has to learn. So
right.
In his
and
case,
that's what we're talking about tonight, mm-hmm. is how we make those individual decisions for individual kids based on what factors. There is no tried and true recipe. There is no cookbook for what is going to work for every single kid. You really
If you want to refer to the experts of the experts, it depends which expert you're referencing, because those who are highly supportive of signs, they think signs are the way to go, and those who are highly supportive of pecs think pecs are the way to go. And
right.
I actually researched this, and I think the answer is it depends on the child. That's the real answer.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. really, that's the truest clinical answer any of us could ever give, Because if you are so committed to just one single approach, I think you might really miss it for a kid who, or you know, who you might miss some strengths and miss some opportunities with a kid. And if you get so locked into, we are only going to do pictures, or we are only going to do signs, or we are only going to talk, I think that that might really not do justice to individual children and individual families' strengths. I mean, I never would have thought, for the little girl that we were talking about before with Rett syndrome, if her mother had not been the incredible woman that she is and been so supportive of all of those augmentative things and alternative things, all the computer systems that she's doing, all of the introducing, you know, she used her Big Mac switches and her programmable systems. She had, I can't even remember some of them. I'm so tired, some of those names of some of the things, some of the systems that we used. But she spent hours researching those and put her books, you know, did the system so that she could read books with her and that little girl could respond using her various systems. And again, I wouldn't have predicted that would have worked for that little girl just based on her diagnosis and based on that little girl's skill set. But when you look at that mom in that individual situation, that's why that worked and that's why that was successful. And so, again, I think it's an individual decision for every single kid and every single family. If this little guy that the therapist wrote in about, if he didn't have a little brother or sister, whoever his sibling is, this might be a totally different situation. But when you look at all the factors that you have to consider, that's when you make the best decisions for kids. It's not always just based on a diagnosis or just based on, you know, just one factor of all those things. You've got to put it all together. And thank goodness we have options for families and options to consider, and that it's not just this is the way you do it, end of story, because it might not even work for some families. Does that make sense?
It does to me. Certainly does. Well, and I will say this, I mean, that whole back to the antiquated term total communication. I have had kids, and you know this, as we, you know, that's why one of the reasons I like to do this show is it kind of always keeps me fresh and keeps me thinking about things, and sometimes it's things I haven't thought about for a long time. And
right.
In the past, back when I was more apt to go to using PECs, I did have some kids who did both, and that can be really pretty good. I mean, it can be, you know, giving them various options and not relying on they have to know the sign to be able to communicate it, or they have to, but,
right.
You know, you have to teach it all, and you have to make sure that they're getting it as you're going along. But then I think, well, maybe I need to be working on PECs a little more than I have been, because I guess I've gotten pretty lazy about not really being. In the past, I used to make the picture books for families, and I just had so many who didn't necessarily embrace it.
Right.
And
here
I spent 4 or 5 hours and my own money to do all of that, and then, you know, I'd go the next week and say, where is it? And, gee, they didn't know, you know, or it was.
But I think your approach, now of just using a few pictures in a session or two to see if it's even a viable system, and judging a parent's level of commitment, that's a good happy medium mature therapist approach, in my opinion, because you're waiting to invest resources, whether it be yours or a parent's, until you know that that system is going to work and until you know that that's going to be something they can use. So I think that's a really, I mean, that's, you know, late 40-year-old Kate versus, you know, earlier. You know what I mean? Trial by fire. Like, let's look at this from a real practical sense here.
Let's see. Yeah, but, you know, there probably undoubtedly have been some cases where, you know, maybe that would have been a good approach. And, you know, according to the PECs people, they're really, the prerequisite skill is being able to reach and grasp and release something. And so that's pretty low.
And I understand that. Mm-hmm. However, I have seen children for whom even that is so frustrating and so beyond their ability to really understand that. But, and again, I think the kicker is we're working with birth to three. And truth be told, I think that they probably did their standardization, you know, where they do the validity and the reliability and all those other scientific words. They probably did not do that on birth to three-year-olds. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but I can pretty much – nobody does anything with babies when they're
right.
when they're unless it's a standardized
for sure not. And
test.
They probably
right.
did it in a, an environment where if it was it was either ABA or it was something highly structured in a preschool
right.
and, or school environment where they had many hours because
right.
I think yeah that could be true. What are the prerequisite skills? Reaching, grasping, releasing, but that means you need 25 hours a week to teach a kid how to make an exchange effectively. You need, you know what I
right.
mean? Some
yeah.
And what we get is an hour a week, and that
right.
assumes that 24 other hours somebody else is going to be supporting that choice and helping
right.
a kid to learn that. And that's, you know, most
yeah,
parents
they
don't
say
have
30 exchanges a day. 30
mm-hmm.
exchanges a day is what you have to do. And again, a lot of families after that fifth or sixth exchange, when mom has just about had it and thinks, I am not going to do this anymore, they, I think, would say, okay, there needs to be more training time. Well, again, the real prerequisite there is that the level of commitment is there, and even if that's just
right.
a practical, on a really practical sense. One other thing that I think that we didn't talk about with signing, why we like sign so much. Did we say this already and I forgot it?
No,
is
not really.
Because, okay, we like signing so much, and lots of other experts do, and I think this Dr. Copeland feels the same way that's in this book that neither you nor I have read. We just have this information this therapist sent us based on what these parents said. But signing is more speech-like in that you have to remember and use different symbols. And remember, words are symbols too. And so for signs, you remember different symbols to use to represent different things. And because of the complexity of that, it's more like speech and it's harder. And it moves the kid developmentally along so that cognitively he's remembering what sign he wants to use. And then he can motor plan to send that message to his little hands and arms so that they cooperate and perform that really specific motor movement that's necessary for that sign. And so in that way, it's more complicated than a picture. And granted, with pictures, there needs to be, a child has to have visual discrimination skills, meaning I can tell the picture of the cup from the picture of the cookies. I know that these round black things are Oreos and these are cookies, and that this picture of this cylinder-like thing is my sippy cup. I mean, yes, that is a very valid skill. And again, the kid that I was talking about earlier that we're both seeing right now, he's not there yet visually. I mean, he's a visual kid. He likes to look at books, but to know that that picture of his sippy cup represents the cup, he doesn't know that yet. And the PECS people would say that's okay, you train it over time, but because he's where he is developmentally, again, I don't think he's there yet to be able to do that. And again, talking about this specific child, he's not, I don't think he's going to be I think we're going to hear more words from him than we do from signs. And what was my original point about this? Oh, talking about signs, how signs are more abstract and more like speech than a picture would be. And I totally believe that. And I do think signing gives children, it's just a higher level skill and prepares them to use different words. But again, the PECS people would disagree with that. But that's my opinion, and this is our show, so we can say what we want, and you can disagree with what you want to. That's okay. We don't even care. Guess what?
We believe it. You can disagree, and you can
yeah.
even let us know you disagree. But, well,
yeah.
what, you know, and I guess my even more common sense thing is, and you know what? You can't lose your hands. You can't, you know, it's a much
yeah.
more, to me, natural thing.
It's
that,
mobile. Yeah.
Yes, there it is. You don't have to have your little signing book or any kind of anything special. You've got your hands, but it's more difficult. So,
yeah,
know.
And again, I think that it's a more challenging developmental skill to be able to sign, and again, it would be more speech-like than trading pictures. But the PECS people have some great research to back up PECS. For some children, that would be the way to go. They say that PECS leads to Burma speech. We've certainly seen that happen with the kids that we've seen and who might have, may or may not have done signs in between. I have a whole lot more success stories for me to talk about with signing than I would do for me using PECS. But again, that might be because my predisposition is towards signing and I feel like I'm pretty good at getting kids there and getting kids ready and getting parents on board versus using PECS. And again, that's just kind of my own philosophical thing. Other therapists are going to feel differently. And again, my whole point with this whole show has been to talk about all the factors that go into making a decision like this. It is not the same for every single kid or every single family. You're going to have lots of variables to consider when you're talking about this. And I hope that we've just introduced the factors that we think about when we're making decisions and helping families make decisions about things related to, are we going to do signs, are we going to do PECS, are we going to do both, what's going to work, you know, are we going to ditch all that and just go straight for words, you know, what will work for that individual family. I have had some families that get so committed to signing that when their child starts talking, the kid, I have literally had this happen, that the kid will say the word and the mom will say, where's your sign?
Yeah,
even when the word is pretty intelligible, and I have to say, Mom,
he said it.
We're going.
Let him have
he's
it.
He's talking. No. We're
I
going for words, okay?
And, you know, that's why I think it's so interesting that you know, I would not have thought that signing was, in essence, somewhat regional, and that in a big old place like Dallas, Texas, that it would be something they don't embrace. Because I have a lot of families more and more who really kind of say, oh, that's neat. You're going to use sign. I mean, I don't get me wrong.
I've seen
I have
that
occasional
on the news.
Stamp.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
It's much more in the you know, media.
Trendy.
And people are,
yeah.
Yes. And a lot of parents kind of think it's kind of cool. And more, so much more now than 5-10 years ago. You know, then
exactly.
It was like, my child's not deaf. Why are you teaching him to sign? And
yeah.
I don't really have to give that talk too much anymore. More parents are like, oh, I like, you know, they've seen Meet the Fockers, and that kid signs.
Or Signing Times or any other little DVD
right.
series. Or they sign on
Sesame
Street.
And there's
Sesame
so many
Street.
Books out,
yeah.
Little kids' books,
yeah.
That I saw one, like at TJ Maxx, about goodnight signs. And it was, you know, it's really kind
right.
of in vogue, and parents are
sure.
more comfortable with it now. And so I guess that's why. Now, the pictures, I think, is, you know, that's a pretty novel concept.
For a lot of families, yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
unless
this is the thing I want to say, because I don't want somebody emailing me from Dallas and saying, we sign in Dallas. You know, these were the 50 or so therapists that were there for my conference. And it wasn't every single therapist. I mean, just a lot of heads were shaking when we were talking about that. And then, remember I told you about this conference, I didn't get quite as much of that yelling out and just contributing their own personal opinions as I get everywhere else I've ever been. So, and I think some of that, too, is the way the hall was designed. It's a little more formal setup. Do you know what I'm talking about? So sometimes when you're in a, like more of a stadium kind of
right.
lecture hall, you don't feel as free to just kind of blurt out stuff. So, I mean, and that could have just been my perception, and it might
not have.
So
they didn't really say, we don't use sign language.
Right. No. They were just shaking
oh.
their heads a lot on the section where I'm saying, do you get it? You know, do you have reluctance to sign here? Because in a lot of places I say that, and everybody goes, no, we all sign. But, like, remember when I was telling you last year about Fort Wayne, Indiana, and that one speech pathologist told the story about the doctor's office, that there was a group of pediatricians that said that really talked to parents about not signing because they thought it made children less likely to talk. I mean, I think that can happen anywhere. I think it can be, you know, so specific to even – one little part of one city
right.
just
right.
based on whatever.
Well, and certainly I have
were.
Parents periodically who feel that way. And
sure.
You know, what it takes, if you can get them on board and get their kid to learn a sign or two before you know it, normally the kid's popping out that word, and then they're sold. You know what I mean?
Right.
Then they see,
sure.
oh, he does say more, and he does
yeah.
say eat, and he does say done, and he does say
yeah.
go. And it's like, yeah, those are the words we signed, you know.
Yeah, and I think the other thing might be a lot of them on breaks talk to me about how many bilingual families they have. And I can see that if a kid is really struggling to learn English and Spanish, that sometimes they might be reluctant to add an additional level of language, meaning a sign on top of that.
Yeah, let's throw a third one in on top to really
I can totally see that. But, yeah, I don't want to leave the misperception that everybody was saying we don't sign in Dallas, because that wasn't it. They were just really with their mannerisms when we were talking about that part, and then just a few conversations that I had. We did not have a big, long talk, and you know how fast-paced the conference was the last time you heard it. Well, I've added about 30 more minutes of therapy footage and stuff, so, boy, we don't have a lot of time to stop and talk about anything anymore. It's pretty much, okay, all right, moving along, you know, so there were not big, long discussions about that. It was just a general kind of feel and perception.
And like you said, I'm sure even here there are some local therapists who don't really do much signing. I know there are.
Yeah.
I mean, I run up against...
You're on teams with them, aren't you? Yeah.
Yep. Yep, and I respectfully disagree with them.
I think
it's a missed opportunity, but there's...
Right.
So you're right. It's not necessarily... One part of the country. Mm-mm.
No, I don't really think so. I really don't think so, because we've heard that other places. But the whole point, the takeaway message from this show that I want people to hear are that there are options with families, as with PECs, with signing, whether you're going to go straight to words, and you really have to look at what the kid can and can't do, what the kid can and does and doesn't like, what his, and along with that, what he can and can't do, meaning that where he is developmentally. If he is still 6 to 9 months developmentally, I think you're going to be better off working on those cognitive milestones that we've talked about a lot on the show these past several months, and that there's a whole chapter on that in Teach Me to Talk, the therapy manual, and working on the social aspects and really getting that interaction going in play, and that would be both with and without toys. And that you're going to be better off working on those things until he's developmentally ready. And then you make the decision about signs or pecs or words at that point. And then use, again, your own judgment based on what a family is telling you will or won't work for them. If they have 4 kids under 5 and mom works 2 and everybody's going, you know, to daycare, to the sitter, or the nanny's coming there, and again, she's just worried about keeping everybody fed and dry. And so you've got to really consider all of those factors when you're making decisions. And parents play a part in that, too. We really just can't dictate what a family is and isn't going to do, nor should we. And so we want to hear what they're telling us. And when a mom says, I can't follow through with this, I think you should automatically, if you're so gung-ho about it, tell her the reasons why and help her figure out how to make that easier. Or move on and find something that she can do.
And acknowledge that it's probably not a system that's going to work for them, because they do really have to be on board.
They have to
and
be.
I've had that with pictures, and I've had that with signs, too. You know,
exactly.
I've given all my sales pitches, and I firmly believe that this would be an effective approach to helping their child communicate. But despite my best sales pitches, they really don't really embrace it. They don't really support it the way I would like them to. And so I kind of continue to do it in sessions, but I kind of let it go after a while. Because
I do, too, because I'm not in the habit of beating parents up. Yeah.
Right.
And I want to empower them and help them feel good about what we're doing therapy-wise. And if they tell me it's not going to work, well, it's not going to work. And that's not up to me to make that decision. So.
Right.
Yeah, so I hope that we've left listeners with some additional things to think about as far as whether they be a mom or a therapist and working with lots and lots of families, and how just all the different factors that go into that. And I do want to remind people that if all this is really new information for you, and you have really this is your first kind of foray into thinking about those things, the therapy manual has tons of good information in there that'll help you, that all of these factors are written out so that you can really mull over it and think about it, and again have a little bit more to go on than our verbal
rambling
session for the for the last hour and 8 minutes. So
we're over once again.
I know. And I always, every time we do a show about PECs or signing, that's when I always get email from therapists. So we welcome your questions. We welcome your discussion. We love to do that. I hope that the therapist and the mom who, the family working with this therapist got the information that they wanted to hear from us tonight and the reassurance that whatever works for your family is what you should go with. And then, you know, just commit and move on. And the good thing about that is if you decide 2 months from now that you have made a mistake, guess what? You can go back and reintroduce the pictures. And it is okay to make a new decision or to back up or to add something or, you know, goodness knows, that's all part of the whole therapeutic process too. So even as a therapist, don't be afraid to go in next week and tell a mom, we are starting over. We are going to try something completely new. Again, that's okay. Thank goodness we have all these other options that we can introduce and try. And that makes our jobs not boring. And I like that we don't have the cookbook, you always do this, you always do that, because that would be pretty darn boring for me. That would be like working in a factory, and goodness knows I am not suited for that. So there you go.
Well, and Laura,
not that there's anything wrong with that now. I'm thinking, oh, Lord, I shouldn't have said that. But anyway.
You know, Laura, the thing that I think you said that is somewhat novel, at least I guess there are others who say it, but not necessarily something you hear commonly with early interventionists in the 0-3 population, is that emphasis on the prerequisite cognitive skills and the prerequisite social skills.
Right.
And I think, you know, a lot of times therapists go in and parents say, I want my child to talk. And they say,
right,
okay, we're going to sign. Okay, we're going to use PECs, whichever they may embrace. And they failed to mention to the parents that really there are some other big things missing here. And we're going to spend the necessary time to bump up the other prerequisite skills. And that is something that, I mean, you've made a huge part of your whole career here, you know, on emphasizing that, but it's not emphasized that much in the trenches with your everyday therapist, and I think you're absolutely right. It's hugely important, you know.
Well, I hope that will be my contribution to our field, because you don't get a lot of information about that. And again, this is why I talk about this in the conference all the time. We know this theory. And all of us, whether we're developmental interventionist like you or whatever you're called in your state, as early educators, with special instructors, whatever your term is, you got information on cognition and on language comprehension, receptive language, again, whatever you called it. So did speech pathologists. But we don't always emphasize that. And again, I've had people write on the conference form, but I have to work on talking because that's what the parents want to work on. And I always think, I wish I could have really spoken to that person one-on-one to say, look, if you don't have all that stuff in place first, it doesn't matter how long you work on that talking because he's not ready yet. And what I really try to emphasize to people, too, is if we do a good enough job working on the prerequisite stuff, talking comes faster and easier than if we had not done it. And a lot of therapists don't understand that. And I hope, again, that if I can make any inroads with any therapist who listens to the podcast or who buys all the DVDs and the manuals or who comes to the conferences or who might come to the conference, is so that they understand that. And not only they understand it, but so that they can explain it to parents. Because when we get good at explaining that, parents are on board. If we relate every single thing we do to late talking, and that's what I say to parents, listen, the reason we're working on this receptive language stuff, the reason we're helping him understand words is because he's got to understand words before he can say words. This is the first piece. Or saying, listen, I know you want him to talk, but the very first step is getting him to play with you. He's got to want to be with you first. Then he will be able to learn how to talk later. And so if you tie everything to talking, which is what every single parent cares about, that makes it a lot easier. But it is something that I think that as a field, in our field and as a profession, and again, I'm talking profession overall, like early interventionist, has been largely ignored. And I hope that I can help change, one therapist at a time in thinking about that, and then they can impact a whole career full of families, and then or therapists that they mentor or other people, so that we eventually have lots of people thinking about language development in the way that it should be, and that you've got to work on the cognitive stuff and the comprehension stuff and the social stuff first before you ever get to that first word. But you're right, it is prevalent. A lot of people don't think about that.
They really don't. Nope, I know. It seems, well, honestly, if I weren't so closely tied to you and your best tutor, your best student, then I'm sure it wouldn't be. And, I have a master's in early childhood education, so you think that would be an integral part of that degree, but it wasn't. And it's kind of novel, and it's really bizarre that it is, but it kind of is.
Well, and I have people tell me all the time, and that's what is really written on the conference evaluations, is thank you for making me really think about how I work on and how I talk about receptive language, or how I work on or talk about social skills, because I haven't paid attention to that in the way that I should. A lady on Friday hugged me in the break and said, "You have forever changed how I will do my job for the rest of my life." I know, that makes me want to just bawl right there. But really, when you change your mind about how we look at these kinds of issues, everything gets easier, because you're working on the right stuff. And it's when you change that whole, and again, it's just the therapist deciding or mom deciding, hey, we're going to work on this in this way, and I know eventually that we will get there. It's a philosophy shift, so I hope that
we're
making
a
difference.
What it has done for me, Laura, is it has made me more comfortable with the discussion, because in the past, I think I would have gone in and thought, his receptive skills are pretty bad. Ooh, these social skills are really not where they need to be. But I would not have said it. I would have thought it. And but if you don't say it and you don't encourage parents to focus on those things, there you are with your 1 hour a week, and you're not going to be nearly as effective if you don't have the, the parents don't know, oh, he's supposed to sit and engage with me. He's supposed to be looking at me. He's supposed to be laughing when I'm being funny. Yes, he is. And if you're not comfortable or conscious enough of that as an issue, and I think that's the difference, is since you've really set it in a structured, concrete way, it's made it easier for me to go in and say, these really are prerequisite skills, and until these come along, we really can't expect him to do much talking. And once they hear that, they are much more receptive to why that's important and what it is I'm exactly talking about and what they need to do to help that. But that's kind of novel, and that kind of, whether it's PECs or signing, if you don't have those other things, the odds are neither one's going to be terribly effective.
None of them, because they're not developmentally ready. And that's why we have to do everything we can to get kids at that point. And, again, I've just said at about the 12-month developmental level, because all of us do better when we have a black and white target to look at and to think about and to reach and to think, okay, what are the things that they're supposed to be doing to be at that level? Let me take a look at that. They need to be using some gestures. They need to be understanding some very basic directions. They need to be participating in some little play routines. And then a therapist can think about it in a better way than if you just said a kid has to be developmentally ready, because, frankly, that still leaves a lot of room for interpretation. And sometimes even highly educated professionals still don't quite know what you're talking about when you say that, even though they even might think they do. They still can't quantify it.
Right.
And so I think looking at that whole number on the chart is useful, to give a point of reference in that way. All right. I think that about does it on tonight's topic. What do you think?
I think we could go on about this one for a long time.
I think so, too, but we are going to wrap. For those of you who are exercising, you are 18 minutes over your hour, if that were your goal.
If you think you're about ready to pass out, that's because, as usual, we were long-winded. We hope you got off the elliptical machine and drank some water because...
And you're doing your cool down now. Yeah, they want us to shut up so they can turn it off.
For our nursing canning peach mommy, you can flip to the other side. You've gone long.
I can't believe you said that. That was hysterical. Okay. Next week, we are going to talk about what our show topic was last week that we didn't get a chance to because we had that great caller, and we've heard from her. She has put on Facebook, on TeachMeToTalk.com's Facebook page, a link to the book that she mentioned, and I have not read that one either, so I'm not I haven't read it. That's all I'm going to say about that, so I just wanted to put that out there. But I think that about does it for tonight. Next week we're going to talk about the social skill stuff that we were going to talk about last week, and I'm just as passionate about talking about that with how we quantify and qualify social skills. So that'll be our topic next week. I hope you'll join us. Have a great week, Kate.
Okay, you
too.
Bye.